You are listening to Know You're Crazy. My name is Susan Dene. We all have crazy. What separates us is how we choose to deal with it. I'm going to be delivering engaging and actionable tools to own your crazy, treat your crazy, and turn it into your own superpower. I hope that you walk away from this show feeling the power and strength within you. And never forget to enjoy your journey because you are worth it. Hey everyone, welcome to the Know Your Crazy Talk Show. My name is Susan Dene, and you are listening to Emotional Recovery in the Raw. Today, I have a special guest joining me. But before I get started with his fantastic introduction, I'm going to ask you a few questions. Do you suffer from PTSD or have you ever? What about depression? Do alcoholism and addiction rule your life? Have you tried nearly every antidepressant on the market and yet remain unhappy? If so, you may be aware of the rapidly growing interest surrounding the use of psychedelics such as psilocybin to help relieve the emotional pain of such disorders. Joining me today to discuss this topic is Greg Ray. Greg is a board member of the Nevada Coalition for Psychedelic Medicine. He represents a rapidly growing community of very conservative people who have discovered ancient psychedelic substances as an extraordinarily powerful tool in aiding in the recovery from mental health issues. Greg has been married to his college sweetheart for 4 decades with 3 grown sons and 2 grandchildren. In college, he played football, recognized as a part of the Nevada Wolfpack Hall of Fame. After his time at the university, he served as a Reno police officer, serving 12 of those years on the SWAT team. Upon the leave of force, he was an evangelical Christian pastor. He was a law-abiding conservative until the age of 56 when he tried psilocybin, in a therapeutic, albeit illegal, setting. It changed his life and freed him from a 7-day-a-week alcohol habit brought on by decades of hypervigilance and exposure to trauma stemming from his police service. Since then, he has made friends with many first responders and military veterans who, through the experience of the ceremonial use of these compounds with a professional guide, were able to experience healing. There are former police officers, firefighters, Navy SEALs, EOD techs, Marines, ER nurses, and trauma surgeons, all of whom have seen and experienced an overwhelming amount of human suffering, which devastates their families and mental health. He has seen marriages saved, relationships restored, suicides prevented, and addictions healed. Greg would describe himself today as a semi-retired mountain bum who is passionate about skiing and mountain biking in the Reno Lake Tahoe area, and he is the founder and director of the recently formed Alternative Treatment Solutions, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to bringing education, awareness, and financial assistance to first responders and military veterans to receive cutting-edge mental health treatment. Today, Greg will be offering us his personal story, along with helpful tools he has utilized to continue his mental health recovery, which includes surrounding himself with a supportive community. Greg, welcome to the Know Your Crazy Talk Show. It is an honor and a pleasure to have you here today to talk on this very important topic. I am just going to just kind of break in with asking you to introduce yourself to everybody other than what I've already said, maybe, but really interested in your story, how you got here today, the history behind that, and really just turn these reins over to you.
Very good. Susan, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for the introduction. And yes, I think my story is perhaps a little unique in this world because I come from such a conservative background. And it wasn't until I was 56 that I actually experimented with these psychedelic medicines to seek my healing. And as you mentioned, you know, I was a competitive ball sports athlete, police officer, evangelical pastor, come from, parents from Kansas, the Nancy Reagan Just Say No. I literally, football days, participated in Just Say No rallies as a big football player and all that. So, just in this culture, this conservative culture of literally just kind of doing what we're told, and trying to do the right thing for the right reason. And you know, I was a soldier in the war on drugs, and all of that, and then but alcohol was such a big part of my life through all those years. And as a police officer, it's really a big part of police culture still, honestly, is the whole alcohol thing, because you are locked out of doing illegal drugs, and you're exposed to so much human suffering and so much trauma, and you're just trying to quiet the voices. And I think that's just why alcohol has become such a part of that culture. And so it really had me pretty good. I mentioned that the 7-day week habit. So it was a couple years even after doing these repeated psychedelic group sessions that I finally was able to get on top of it and completely change my relationship with alcohol and really step into some freedom. So it's been great.
That is fantastic. So talking about, and please help me because I Googled this even and hit pronounce, psilocybin. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's correct. Yes.
All right. So I'll probably hammer that at some point. Okay. But I'm just going to read the definition to start us out. For anybody who's watching this right now that's wondering, you know, what are they talking about? You know, what are the psychedelics that they're referring to? Like, where are we going to with this? And so psilocybin is a hallucinogenic substance obtained from certain types of mushrooms that are indigenous to tropical and subtropical regions of South America, Mexico, and the U.S. These mushrooms typically contain 0.2 to 0.4% of psilocybin and a trace amount of, another hallucinogenic substance.
It's psilocin. You got it. It's pretty
Thank
close.
You very much. Thank you very much. And so essentially, if you were back in the day, like, so I'm a self, you know, recovered alcoholic, 22 years, clean and sober. I talk about it a lot on the show. So alcohol too was a solution for me for many, many years to recover from all kinds of emotional disorders, from trauma to depression, to anger, to rage, to that was the solution. And it calmed the nerves, and then marijuana kicked in on there and it really calmed the anger for many years. A little bit of the drug story. My story was back in Phoenix, did a little bit of crystal meth, a little bit of cocaine, alcohol every day, marijuana every day. And then there was this one time, and you and I were chuckling about it before the show started. There was this one time.
What's about the one time?
This is that one time. So if anybody who's listening to this, that I had an honorary roommate who had done what most of you might know this being referred to as mushrooms, LSD tripping, this type of thing. And I say she was honorary because I think she knew very well what she was up to. And I had a friend visiting and we did shrooms, a massive amount of shrooms, if I recall correctly. And I was chuckling with you. So I had the experience back in the day, which some of you may be more familiar to as you're thinking about psychedelics. And this is why I have Greg on the show today, because the trip I was used to, as I described to him, I describe it as like I went through the four seasons. I was angry, I was crying, I was happy, and then I saw God. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And didn't mind it, but it was the only time I did it. And I had this extreme example of what psychedelics were and what they did. And because for me back then, although I did a lot of substances that put me out of an out of control state, those made me scared of like really being out of control. But this is not what you're talking about. You're talking about something that's completely different than what I'm describing. And I kind of wanted to start out there for the audience or for anybody who's tuning in, you know, because I talk a lot about recovery from alcoholism and addiction on the show. In fact, I had a couple women that I work with call me today when they saw the title of this show post on social media, like, Susan, what's up over there? And so I really, but that's why I had you on the show, because many people, believe it or not, in the recovery community, people are already partaking in what you're here to advocate for today. And so I thought it would be a really good thing to bring in some education, to bring in insight from somebody like yourself who comes from a background, who, you know, not only, you know, abused alcohol, used it for your own solutions, like I was saying, I did, but understand and can really articulate what are we talking about here? Because we're not talking about the super trippy stuff that I did.
Yeah, yeah, that's well said. And the major difference between classic plant-based psychedelics and alcohol, for example, is we drink alcohol to check out, to numb things. I want to get away from what's going inside of me. The interesting thing about classic psychedelics, such as mushrooms, is it's the opposite direction. It causes you to check, go inside and really get in touch with your feelings in a profoundly wonderful way when done properly. Go back to many people are familiar with, you know, the high dose kind of recreational trip, and it becomes very disorienting and kind of weird. Yeah, I say it's in situations like that, it's like giving a monkey a machine gun without guide, without experienced people, without a set setting, knowing your dose just right, having an intention in almost a therapeutic session way. The results are profoundly different when done with intention, with a guide. And one thing I do find I have to get over is, and I understand that people have sometimes a resistance to taking a drug to get over another drug. Sometimes there's resistance right there because mushrooms got lumped in with all the other, you know, dangerous Schedule I drugs back in 1970 when Richard Nixon declared the war on drugs and all that. It just got lumped in. And it was really more of a war on hippies and minorities, actually. But anyway, that's, I digress on that. But what's becoming really accessible and popular are actual guides. And so most mid-size or major cities have some type of psychedelic society. So if somebody doesn't know where to start, like this is illegal in the state, where do I start? What I'd suggest is look up, is there a psychedelic society in your town? And like I said, most mid-sized, large-sized cities have one or several psychedelic societies where they have non-medicine meetings, places they can go get some education and awareness. And then oftentimes they can connect you with a guide who can kind of take you from there. And so that's, it's accessible in that way. And then in these controlled situations with seasoned guides, it's fantastic. It's wonderful. It's difficult. It's challenging. But and I don't know the science that well, to describe it, but I just know this is that, something happens in your brain that there's this part of your brain that creates your ego. It's kind of the traffic cop that keeps all the thoughts on the shelf, and it's what makes you you. And in this wonderful, mysterious way, when this, I call it medicine, takes effect in you, it gives that traffic cop the night off, and for a couple hours, 4 or 5 hours, all those thoughts that are on the shelf are going to get to connect with each other. And now scientists call that neuroplasticity, that there's actually parts of your brain that are talking to each other that normally don't, which of course creates healing, but then it also connects, because that's where often your pain is locked up in, is that traffic cop is keeping all the pain up on the shelf as well. But when all those some painful memories can actually come down and start running around and talking to each other, that's when some of the healing can really begin. So it's profoundly and mysteriously wonderful.
Yeah. One of the things, as we were talking right before the show, I was sharing with you, you know, as much as I've been in the recovery world for so many years and worked with many women and other women have worked with me in sobriety, when it comes to this category of drugs, I was rather quite ignorant about it. So it was beneficial for me to do the research and to look into a couple of things. And so things that you're referencing right now, I'm just going to add to what you've already said. To date, here's what science right now is showing behind this. To date, studies have shown that this therapy is beneficial in relieving symptoms of treatment-resistant depression, obsessive compulsive disorders, and other mental health disorders. Due to the limitations based on it being a Schedule I substance. So Schedule I substances, if I can word this correctly, are going to be categorized probably by the government as far as being highly either addictive, and they base that on the medicinal use of the drug, plus the possibility of how addictive it can become. So it's classified, and this might be what you were referring to as far as, I think you said back in the Nixon days, where that came from. But because it's a Schedule I, the studies have been limited. But in 2009, John Hopkins Medicine established the world's largest psychedelic research center in order to start to dive into the medicinal properties from this drug. And one study found, and this is the one study I found out of the research that I did, this is the one I come across, one study found that taking psilocybin in combination with talk therapy, significantly improved symptoms of clinical depression. Some study participants continued to experience benefits for as long as 1 year after receiving just two doses of the compound. And although the mechanisms of psychedelic-assisted treatments remain unclear, the action, and this is where you're talking about some of the effects on the brain and the mind, the action of these drugs at the serotonin 2A receptor and downstream effects on neurotransmission, intracellular signaling, epigenetics, and gene expression appear to enhance plasticity at multiple levels, including neuronal structure, neural networks, cognition, effect, and behavior. That is, in a nutshell, the science that John Hopkins has done. And as I was looking at that research, it was quite fascinating. They took the participants over a one-year time frame, so 12 months, dosed them, periodically, and at the end of that, scored their depression at the beginning, scored the depression at the end. Plus, they did multiple different measures, spirituality, like all the kinds of different things. And then at the end, they said, okay, where are we at on this with depression? 30% of that group had picked up their antidepressants again. And so they threw out that 30% of the folks because they couldn't get a clear reading. And they said, what's left? What happened in this group? And significantly across the board, depression was decreased over a year's time. And that was one of the best studies that have come out on what you're pertaining to right now. And what I, how I found you, Greg, was I was at a healthcare conference talking to a peer of yours, and had overheard him mentioning that he was going to be going to a ceremony. And I clued in on what he was talking about based on my own, influence around people, I know. And so then I inquired with him. But what I found fascinating, and I want you to talk a little bit about this if you don't mind, the reason I wanted to get you or him on the show was the aftermath recovery. Because as I know in sobriety, I can put down the drink or the drug, but then my emotional state is still hanging there. I can do, in the 12 steps of recovery, I can do a fourth or a fifth step, which is pretty much, I'm going to tell somebody all my truth and then have them, more or less be a mirror to me and then give me some feedback. I have had literally spiritual experiences where all the pain is lifted. The anger of my mother left, gone, years, just boom, gone. Yet, if I don't continue that practice, if I don't have some sense of follow-up and feedback with, in my case, community, there's a chance that I'm just going to digress again, right? And so there's this continuous willingness and desire to move forward once I experience this healing. And so I would like you to share on your experience the aftermath. And so now that we kind of understand what the science is, because after you, and maybe we should back up a little bit on the actual journey.
Yeah.
Because I know you mentioned the guides and what's that about, but maybe you could go a little bit more into what exactly you're talking about with that, like that setting, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So there's a couple different ways to do it. Probably the majority of guides do, maybe we'll have a couple of people and you're in an eye mask and headphones with some music, and you're kind of by yourself, and they'll dose you and they're monitoring you, monitoring your vitals, but you're in an eye mask and you're in your music and you're kind of in your own world. Another way to do it is the group style, where it might be a combination of MDMA and psilocybin, and it actually, you're with a group and you're actually talking about things while you're experiencing this mushroom high. So that's kind of the two different methods of doing it. I have to say this, the foundation of the mushroom experience is this, is that there's this transcendent and almost overwhelming recognition of oneness with all the universe. And that in this mysterious way, there's this amazing peace and everything's okay. And you have this almost overwhelming experience of just wanting to connect with all sentient beings. And just that in and of itself as an individual is such a powerful experience, to just know that inside of your brain are the thoughts of just absolute bliss and peace. And so just that's really the foundation of it. And so
do you think when people experience that level of connectedness, that it does a really fine job of kind of putting everything in the right size? Do you know what I mean by that? Like,
we have a phrase in our community that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection.
There you go.
The opposite of addiction is connection. And so being connected to yourself, first of all, that everything is okay within me, and then everything is okay with the people around me, is the foundation, I believe, of our sobriety. And it's where it all begins. And what the misunderstanding many folks have is they think that they have to keep doing, like, much like classic psych medicines, where you have to keep dosing yourself on a daily, weekly basis for that to have an effect. That's not how psilocybin works. It's essentially like a microsurgery in your brain, and you are shown essentially a room. Like, there's a door in your brain that you got to access inside that door and go, oh my goodness, I got to enter this room. And inside this room, it's everything is wonderful and peaceful. And then when the experience is over, you can't unsee that room then. And so you then have access by your will and by your decision to go, oh, there's a different way to be. There's a room in my brain where everything's okay. And now in my sober state, I can have the new tools to be able to walk into that room really anytime I want to. So,
and have a new reference point, would you say? A new reference point, a new memory of it being, you know, a shift in perception, that type of experience.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. That's it. Because, you know, once you see that room, you really can't unsee it. And now you're aware that it's there, that there's this different way to be. For me, a lot of it had to do with the self-critical talk, the voices that have been screaming in my head my whole life of, I'm not enough, and I got to do something to prove myself.
Yeah.
To experience under this medicine, all of a sudden, those voices gone. I didn't even know it was possible. And then once I was led into that room, I was like, okay, I'm going to do everything possible to now live in that room. And that's what I've been able to do.
And so that's fantastic. So let me ask you about that. So you have the realization, you see the room, you understand that these negative voices and this negative self-talk is not necessary at all for you to live your life. And so afterwards, so what I just heard you say, which I thought was fantastic, is you made a decision that I am going to do everything in my power to more or less don't return to that negative thought pattern, because I've been shown that I don't need to, like it's all right. And so there's the aftermath of the work. That's what I want to talk about. So afterwards, you've now had this awakening. You understand it's almost like you're given a possibility. Like, you finally feel the possibility, like life is possible without these voices.
Yeah.
Life is possible.
Yes.
And so how do you stay on that path of direction after you have this awakening? What's the after recovery piece of it?
Great question. First of all, I would say that there are the integration, we call it, that happens after a psilocybin experience. It literally can take several days or even weeks to unfold those things that happen inside your brain.
Mm.
I believe part of that is because it's such an intense experience, and there's so many thoughts that just rapid fire happen, and all these synapses that connect and all these things that happen, that we only have the ability to synthesize it at such a certain rate. And I've literally had the experience myself and several of my friends, like a week or even 2 weeks after this experience, have just some kind of massive breakthrough or realization or meltdown or tears, or call a buddy and say, oh my God, it's finally revealed to me. This is what happened. But again, going back to the experience, it's so intense and so wonderful that it just takes a while to unravel it. And so the conversation and the community that happens after the ceremony is the most important. The effectiveness experience these compounds is exponentially more effective when done in community, when done in integration, but done with a skilled therapist, with the support of family and friends, and talking and talking and talking. So another part of it is journaling. And we encourage all of our participants to, in the days after the ceremony, to just journal. And I literally just to look up, just about a month ago, we had a guy who did his very first ceremony, had never journaled a day in his life. Mm. And after that ceremony, he had like a 100-page journal, and he had it filled out in like a week.
Wow.
And his therapist that he'd been seeing for years, all of a sudden they thought they were the best therapist in the world, because their client is now just cracked open and totally in touch with all this, some of these childhood things and this and that. But man, I can't emphasize enough is the power of the community. Another thing with journaling, community, talking with friends and family and therapists, the meditation practice.
Sorry, because I'm going to definitely get you into the meditation piece of it. But what I really liked about what you just shared was the word integration. I liked the fact that you're letting people know this is a major shift in perception. So don't think that after you have this major awakening that you're just going to go back home and do the dishes and not feel anything. In fact, you're going to feel so much that you're going to want to be tied into the community so that you have a resource and an outlet. I mean, you're really talking about, you've now taken in all this information on a level that you didn't even know was there. And now you're going to process and integrate. It's super important that you express that out and share that with somebody, but also probably be support for another person, right? Because isn't that community? It's where we give and we take. Yep. We give and we take, we give and we receive. Maybe that's a better word. We give and we receive, we give and we receive. It's an exchange of experience. It's exchange of emotion. It's an exchange of emotional intimacy with one another. Right. But I like the fact that you're letting people know this isn't something that you just come home and go back to doing stuff. I mean, for a gentleman to write hundreds of pages of journal who has been in therapy, I'm assuming for a while.
Yes.
It's like I like to describe, you've got a balloon. I love it when I work with somebody who's just ready to go. Like you can tell they've been filling up their balloon, and then all of a sudden they let the air out and they're just boom, they're ready to go. Right. I mean, that's kind of what I'm visioning when you're telling me, like, once they unplug and out comes everything and the awakenings, and that community support is absolutely necessary.
Absolutely. And actually, it's good to mention too, that after one of these ceremonies, there's a good day or two where you're actually kind of fragile.
Yeah.
The next day you're exhausted. It's really kind of a difficult, intense experience. And we tell everybody, man, don't make any major decisions for a solid 2 weeks. No, don't get married. Don't get divorced. Don't go buy a new car. Don't quit your job. Let things settle. I mean, it's really, it's not to be taken lightly. You're in a fragile state. And another really wonderful part about most of the communities that do this work is there's some rules about sharing in the integration about, first of all, the basic rule is that every person has all the answers inside of them for all of their problems and all their situations. Yeah. The magic is between the community and this medicine. It's just creating an environment where those answers that are inside of you are going to get unlocked. So it's really important when we're working with each other to listen, ask questions, and stay away from our advice. We have a big fat rule is nobody gives advice. You can give a reflection. The difference between reflection and advice reflects, hey man, when this happened, I saw this was wonderful that you said this or that, and we shared this experience, whatever. But man, we just really honor the fact that the all the answers are inside each individual for their situation. And this is just about pulling that out.
It is so important. I mean, one of the principles that even we practice in the rooms of recovery is no crosstalk. And people get all on fire in AA about no crosstalk, right? But it's really at the foundation of what you just shared. It's about sticking to my story, coming from my experience, and not telling you what I think of everything and not telling you what my advice would be, right? It's such a powerful tool and skill.
And it actually, it's really, and especially I came from an evangelical church background where the culture in that thing is you had to have a scripture for everybody. You had to have an answer for everybody, especially as a pastor. You're supposed to be like the Bible answer guy. And so it was so wonderful to retool myself, and just, it feels kind of powerless at first because you're just like sitting and listening to somebody and going, I'm just here.
Yeah.
I don't have any answers for you because they're inside of you. But then you really start to understand the magic of presence and just listening and showing up for people and shutting up with your opinions and just being there for people is so incredibly powerful.
So I have got to ask you, being an ex-police officer, a decision maker, somebody who I can only assume if you're on a SWAT team, but you've also taught. So I love this topic right now because you're talking about, like in the introduction, in your bio, we're talking about ER nurses, trauma surgeons, military, all decision makers, all people who are just meant to make the decision at the time. Let me tell you what to do. Right. Yeah. So one particular professional framework to the extreme. We're not, I mean, not jobs are, all jobs are important depending on what you want to do, but I'm talking these lines of work are trauma oriented, and you witness so much pain, but to be in that decision-making role and then reverse that and have to quietly, humbly sit and listen. Woo, I bet you that's a learning curve for you folks.
The timing of this is great. Just last night, once a month, we have our Monday night, we have an integration circle. There's no medicine involved. It's a sober group.
Yeah.
And just last night, we had our monthly integration meeting. And it's just, like I mentioned, it's SEALs and cops and firefighters and medics and all these, like you mentioned, it's super decisive, fix it people. I mean, somewhere in our childhood, we went, oh, my superpower is going to be fix things. Just come and help everybody, you know? And yeah, exactly, right?
Me too.
And yeah. And so then we go, oh, wait a minute. Okay, there's a childhood wound right there. So we already have all this trauma. Because there's a reason that we signed up to jump through all these hoops and go through all these really intense schools and experiences and all that. So we're already messed up in our head because we're trying to be somebody important. Then you take that very difficult, broken person and you expose them to just years and years and years of trauma and human suffering. And you wonder why we're a little bit wrapped around the axle. But so last night we have our meeting and we had like four new guys and it was just so fantastic because a couple of guys just showed up and just said, look, I'm just tired of fighting this fight by myself. And just the humility of sitting in a room with a bunch of leathernecks that are a bunch of intense fix-it cats. But the culture in that room is, look, we're just here for each other. We're here to hold space and to listen and to just be a presence with each other. And everybody can leave their Mr. Answer jacket at the door.
Nice.
It's really just got to be all, there's almost like a childlike innocence that's just
a surrendering.
Oh, it's a surrender. Exactly. It's
surrendering, right? Yeah. Like surrendering to have to fix everything. The whole, I'm tired of being tired. I mean, I'm tired of being sick and tired. I'm tired of being sick and tired. Right.
And we have a phrase like you leave your armor at the door, your armor, your sword at the door, you're safe here and you can let down. And it's a wonderful experience to see how quickly those folks will just lean in and take their armor off and bare their heart. And there's tears, and it's mm-hmm. fantastic. It's just wonderful healing. Yeah. Yeah.
What is one of your favorite stories, either of your own or somebody that you've witnessed recover from? I'll use my recovery words, from a hopeless condition, right? Whether that's a hopeless emotional, mental condition, whatever that may be, whatever level that might be at. What is one of your favorite stories?
Probably the most recent one is actually a young man who I knew from church, who was a diaper kid in our church. And he's now 40 years old. And he was went in the army, served in Iraq, saw combat. He had a fairly traumatic childhood, really rigid religious family system. But he was the guy who was just wore a white hat, and instead of rebellious, he just became a good guy. And really, really hard just to do the right thing. Married young, had kids, has a good career, but had some combat trauma from Iraq, and just like we talked before, just was trying so hard to, really wrestle with alcohol, and just trying so hard to figure things out and be a good man. But he was just trapped in these patterns, these kind of dysfunctional patterns with his wife, and the marriage was struggling, and fathering issues were struggling, and he just didn't have the tools he just didn't know why things weren't going to work.
Yeah.
And I ran into him, and the next thing you know, he had did his first ceremony, and it was literally like, because like we talked about, someone who's trying so hard, and then all of a sudden they just get a little help over the fence with a really powerful experience, and man, this guy's just taken off. And there's been so much healing in his personal life, in his marriage, his perspective as a father. He's just so radically changed so quickly. And it's almost to a man in our group, that story over and over and over. Like, we had another a firefighter who's just, I mean, something that's really surprising to me is I'm just seeing how many first responders struggle with suicidal ideation.
Yeah.
And just that the seeing these horrible experiences and these just all this human trauma. And then most of us have really strong self-critical voices. And just the tendency of, look, I'll do anything to silence these voices. I'm tired of silencing these. I'm tired of this. And so I'm surprised at how much I see that. And guys in their first and second ceremony, and they literally, they're like, they're gone. Those voices are gone. And the suicidal ideation is just gone. And so I see that story over and over again. Yeah.
It's such a wonderful thing to witness somebody's recovery, but then to see the gifts when you see, and it was in your bio. That's why I wanted to talk about it. When you see families restored and you see relationships rebuilt, and you see these beautiful things happen in people's lives, and you're part of that follow-up of what's going on with those individuals. So anyway, it is time to go to break. I have to take at least one break. It's about a quarter till. So we're going to break for a minute or two, everyone. And when we come back, we're going to probably talk a little bit more of the aftermath, the recovery, some things, maybe some top feedback that Greg may have for someone if they've got any questions out there. And we'll just go from there. So we will be back shortly. Stay tuned. It is time to get inspired to take action in your life. Tune in to Know You're Crazy.
Crazy.
With me, Susan Danae. We are identifying, understanding, and treating our crazy one episode at a time. We all have crazy in our lives. The thing that sets us apart is how we deal with it. And I've got you covered. Enjoy your journey. You are worth it. Visit SusanDanae.com. That's DENEE.com.
You have one life to live. You want to spend it doing something you enjoy and that has meaning. If you're listening to this, then you're among the many who feel that the work they're doing is no longer a fit. My comprehensive coaching will support you and help you figure it out. I've coached hundreds of people through career transition. So visit my website today to book a free call, www.reinventing-u.com, when what you do matches who you are.
Are you struggling to find peace in your addiction recovery?
Hi, I'm Tanya D, a spiritual life recovery coach and founder of The Peace We Crave. After getting and staying sober, I asked myself, now what? In my relentless pursuit of serenity, for the precious gift of sobriety, my Creating Calm and Recovery program was born. It's a 90-day personal spiritual journey that helps you remove blocks, get clarity, and experience sobriety on a whole new level. Please book your free discovery call today. Visit thepeacewecrave.com.
Are you living life in full expression? Join me, Beth Wolf, on Life in Full Expression each Monday at noon Pacific time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To learn how to explore, elevate, expand, and live your best life, discover the seven dimensions of life blueprint of expression. Get ready to fully express, develop your limitless capacity, and experience amazement to become an igniter and inspire. Visit BethWolf.com to discover the dynamic coaching of life.
Tune into the Cause It's Easy Show with me, Coach Easy. Empowered empath, empowering mindsets, and building confidence through adversities. Every Tuesday at 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tap into your life coaching for self-esteem, confidence, positivity, happiness, and success. I will show you the easy way to make your life amazing, no matter what. For more information on the Coach Easy approach, visit Cause It's Easy, that's EAZY.
Welcome back to the Know You're Crazy show. My name is Susan Denae, and you are listening to Emotional Recovery in the Raw. Today, you are listening to myself and my guest, Greg Ray, talk about the use of psychedelics on mental health. Greg has extensive history and experience working not only on himself in regards to his own mental health and recovery, but also other people in the same line of work as him, such as I think a good way to describe that would be hyper-vigilant roles of employment, such as SWAT team, ER, surgeons, military, individuals who have witnessed and experienced trauma on extreme levels. And now there seems to be a solution that is has been presented that's helping many people recover. And psilocybin is the one. And so Greg is joining us today with a fantastic discussion around this topic. And now that we're wrapping up, because I knew this hour was going to fly by, but there were a couple things I wanted to talk to you in addition to what we've already talked about. One of them was the bill that you've been passionate about advocating for, SB 242, if you'd like to talk about that. And then afterwards, I want to get into your new nonprofit that you began and give you an opportunity to share about that also.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, Nevada Senate Bill 242. The original thrust was to decriminalize the possession use of psilocybin mushrooms. I'm part of the Nevada Coalition for Psychedelic Medicine. And it eventually was passed. It was signed by the governor into law. It was reduced to a work study, which is totally fine. So for the next 2 years between now and the next legislative session here in Nevada, there is a funded group of 14 professionals that are tasked with doing studies. And both universities, Nevada in Reno and UNLV down in Las Vegas, their medical schools now will have the ability to legally access these compounds and conduct their own trials.
And that's a significant win.
It really is. And so the great part now is in 2 years, this group will be tasked with then presenting to the legislators, okay, what types of laws should we pass or not based on our own research that we got the ability to do. So it was a huge win. And again, being law enforcement, it was really fun to be able to go into it because we had to get, the Democrat vote was easy because the most of the Democrats are okay with the hippies having their trucks, right? We needed the Republicans. And so myself and another guy, he's a former Navy SEAL, I'm former law enforcement. We would go into these lawmakers' offices and just tell our story and say, hey, look, these aren't the drug you thought. And it was wonderful as we told our stories to be able to like really get these folks to flip and get on our side and actually advocate for it. So so the first responder and military veteran component is really quite strategic in these legal environments because we have a voice of kind of a voice of reason. And you know, we've incurred a lot of the suffering and pain by trying to enforce these drug laws that are really kind of backwards. So anyway, it's been fantastic, and kind of, it was kind of fun to be part of a little bit of history here in our state of Nevada.
Well, I thought it was fantastic. The video that was sent to me was you testifying for them, and it was really good. I mean, that's where I really pulled a lot of the information from you for this show. And I thought your presentation was fantastic and a huge win for you guys. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. It's just wonderful to try to get, you know, people that need this the most to get in their hands in a legal way. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, tell me about your nonprofit. What do you got going on?
Yeah. So as I got into this psychedelic work, I also discovered the magic of ketamine and ketamine infusion therapy. And a little bit of history behind that. Ketamine was developed by the government, by the U.S. military, as a battlefield anesthesia, because the battlefield anesthesia known as PCP was actually shutting lungs down, and it was fatal too many times. So they needed a battlefield anesthetic that was safe. And so serendipitously, that was back in 1964 or so, early Vietnam, serendipitously, they found out that when given about a mid dose of ketamine, it really mimicked a psychedelic psychological experience. And just accidentally, these soldiers were coming out of these radical experiences, and this ketamine was showing them, like I mentioned, kind of showing them a room in their mind, mm-hmm. and really freeing them from alcohol problems and PTSD and addictions and all these kind of things. So about 20 years ago, it was made legal for ketamine for doctors to have clinics to do ketamine infusion therapy. So the great thing about ketamine is it's legal for people to do. Like, here's an example, your typical police officer. It is not a good option for them to do psilocybin. They're committing a felony.
I see what you're saying.
Get their own healing. So we're telling, no, if you're an active duty police officer, it's not an option for you to do illegal drugs. However, there is another thing. If psilocybin is about a 10, I would say ketamine is about an 8.5 as far as its effectiveness. And so the only problem with ketamine therapy is it's relatively expensive, and it hasn't been around long enough to be covered by most insurance plans. And so I just saw that there's these, again, mostly cops, a lot of firefighters, and then there's also folks that are just, I mean, they're not ready to go to some house with some underground person who calls himself a guide and do illegal drugs. It just sounds it's a little too risky. But they'll go to a doctor's office one-on-one and have a consultation with a doctor, and then have a series of infusions, about an hour each, and really get almost the same effectiveness as you would from psilocybin. So my nonprofit foundation, I started to, again, bring a lot of it is just education. Like you talk to your typical cop about ketamine, and all they know it is a street drug. They don't maybe even know that it's,
yeah. Is it fair to ask or to say that these individuals who are under this level of stress or say depression, whatever it is they have going on, that they've already attempted the traditional routes of healing?
Yes.
Would that be talk therapy, antidepressants? Like, they've been through the rigmarole, and ketamine, and I don't know enough about ketamine. I know, like, in the back of my mind, there's something telling me that people in recovery are more scared of ketamine than they would be of ayahuasca, just for addictive reasons. But I don't know enough about that to really talk eloquently about it.
Right.
But I'm assuming, based on what you're sharing, is it's in the similar ballpark. But this is an example of, we've tried everything, and we're still looking for the breakthrough. And this medicine, is what you're saying, can give a similar impact, and it's legal, and they have access to it, being in the roles that they're in, to where they could have that experience and then still, after this, follow up with group, community, everything that you've talked about already. Is that correct?
Yes. So, yeah. So the ketamine treatment, it's not, again, it's not the kind of thing where you have to have a little ketamine every day.
Gotcha. No.
it's a transcending experience to show you that room in your brain to then go, oh my gosh, that room exists. And then through traditional methods like talk therapy, meditation, community support, it's then incarnating and walking out those, that progress. Yeah. So we don't recommend somebody be in ketamine therapy for more than 12 months or so.
Gotcha.
If they still need more of that ketamine after 12 months, they're not pulling their end of the rope.
They're not. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. So I think like with everything else, there are avenues to healing. There are many avenues to healing, but at the end of the day, we are still responsible for our choice and how we address those avenues and how we continue to have willingness to keep moving on in the healing process. And that responsibility is always going to come down to us as individuals. So these wonderful medicines are out there for you. There's wonderful recovery out there for you, no matter what angle or what growth, whatever you're after in order to heal emotionally. Because at the end of the day, in my opinion, we are all meant to be happy, joyous, and free most of the time. Yes, life is life, but life is meant to be lived. I like to say often, I did not get sober to be miserable. I did not get sober to be miserable. I got sober to live a life full of happiness and joy. So when the closer to that I am, the better off I am, but I got to work at it. Happy doesn't land in my lap. I work for it. Thank you, Greg, so much for being here. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for being on the Know You're Crazy show. Fantastic stuff. So for anyone wanting to get a hold of me, you can do that at my website at susandanae.com. You can also reach Greg at his Facebook page. I believe it's probably just Greg Ray, R-E-A. Is that correct? And if you wanted to get a hold of him, you can also just reach out through me through my website. Be more than happy to put you in connection with him. All right, everyone, have a fantastic Tuesday evening. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
You have been listening to Know You're Crazy.
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 And my name is Susan Danae. We are identifying, understanding, and treating your crazy one episode at a time. Tune in to TransformationTalkRadio.com. To connect with me or Growth Spurt Your Life, please visit SusanDanae.com. That's SusanDanae, DENEE.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.